Hello and welcome to Kazowie, the podcast where we explore the nooks and crannies of the Marvel Universe. I'm Kelly.
And this is Alex, and welcome to episode 5 or 6 of the most powerful podcast ever.
Alex, how are you today?
I am not too bad. How about you?
I am mild, thank you.
Mild. Oh, mild is good.
Yeah, I'm mild. Yeah. You know why I'm mild, Alex?
Why is that?
Because I spent over 2 hours reading 6 issues of Longshot.
Okay, and I was taking mild to be a good thing, but is it a good thing, bad thing? What do you think?
It's a mild thing.
It's a mild thing. Okay.
That's what it is.
Well, yeah, we've been talking about this a little bit over the, you know, we started reading these, gosh, a couple weeks ago, right?
You're right.
And, oh boy, were these ones tough.
Yeah, these were a struggle. And for those, a quick tune in. So we decided last time we recorded that the next series we were going to tackle was issues 1 through 6 of Longshot.
That's right, and this is the whole miniseries.
Exactly, it's the entire miniseries. It's the way the character was introduced, written by Anne Nocenti, I believe, is how it's pronounced her name.
Or Nocenti? I have no idea.
I don't either. I suppose I could look it up, but I'm not going to bother because that's not what we're about here on Kazowie. We're not about references or getting things correct. We're about about things that we love, which is really odd Marvel comics.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, Alex, like you and I both said, this was a bit of a struggle for us. I think this might have been a struggle for me in 1985 when I was 10 years old, even to read. I've gone back and I've read a good 50 issues of Fantastic Four written by Stan Lee, and enjoyed myself much more than I have with Longshot. Oh man, it's a tough one. I am going on complete bunk here. I had heard, or I believe I had read once that there was a writer in the 80s. What they basically did is they gave the secretary something to write just because they needed something written just so that they could release more stuff, and they had a shortage of writers that would write for the paltry amount that they were making. So basically they just said, hey, on top of being the secretary, could you also write this comic for us? And that's how. And I could be completely disrespecting this person. I mean, she may be some sort of great author now, and I don't know, writing kids' books and I don't know, cookbooks or something like that. But yeah, this is a tough one. Yeah. But
you know, and I don't know. You know, I did some reading around on the Wikipedias, and I'm not sure that that's this person. But you know, this person supposedly went on and, you know, became kind of a big shot with Marvel, writing a long run of Daredevil and stuff. So I'm not.
So really the sure writer of Longshot became a big shot?
Yeah, right. Oh, puns.
So give us a, Alex, give us a quick rundown, just give us a quick arc of these 6 issues. You know, give me like a thumbnail, 1 minute of what all happens in this, and let's talk a little bit about the character Longshot, and then we can grumble a little bit more about the writing.
Sure. Well, first we should say, you know, I think I was probably at a little bit of a I had a little bit of an advantage over you in reading these. I think I knew a little bit more about the characters, and so I could kind of see long run how some of this stuff was working. But that said, the first couple issues at least were a real struggle. Anyway, Longshot is this guy. He's from another universe. He's a slave. He's a slave to Mojo. Mojo, who rules Mojoverse.
Right.
And he all we really know in the very beginning is that he's this guy from another universe. He's somehow lost his memory. He's being chased by a bunch of bad guys. He jumps through a portal into our world, and and tries to figure out what the hell is going on. And so he continues to be pursued by these, you know, these hunters or whatever. Mm. And while he's you know, he's just who knows? I mean, he running away from these folks, he runs into a movie set where he runs into this woman Ricochet Rita, who kind of becomes a big character in the arc. Mm. He befriends this demon, you know, who he names Pup, whose name is actually what, Gog or Magog, I'm not sure. But anyway, so he kind of keeps doing his thing, and really it's just like total like gobbledygook. You really have no idea what's going on from one panel to the next.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a real there's a theme in this. It's this sort of discontinuity from I mean you can tell that it is telling it, you know, it is getting you from point A to point B. But I mean, sometimes even like within one particular word bubble, you'll kind of get lost as to what they're talking, the character is talking about. They switch. There's no good indicator in. It's as though, you know, someone was writing this but did not understand that sequential art and paneling and how that sort of storytelling can happen, and can really add a lot of clarity to a dialogue, and so you don't really get that here. So you have to kind of puzzle out where something was supposed to end and where it's supposed to, you know, where the next topic basically is getting spoken. There are a lot of these, especially in the first two issues, where it gets deeply confusing. We don't understand. We already don't understand what's happening, and then there's even more discongruity added on by the writing. But here's something. It is reminiscent of something. It makes me feel like whoever the people who were creating this comic book were probably big Roger Zelazny fans. Have you ever read any of Roger Zelazny stuff?
I have no idea who that is.
He's the guy who wrote the Chronicles of Amber. It's worth a read as long as you don't mind this sort of confusingness off the bat. It pays off in the long run, really, Roger Zelazny does, and I'm not sure if Longshot really pays off in the same way. Right. But, I mean, what it does is it starts out with a character who's suffering from amnesia, who just kind of throws you into the action where you're really confused and disoriented, and I suppose it makes you feel similar to how the character feels. But there would be sections in which, you know, the thing behind Amber is... they're this special family. They're like this sort of central family of the universe. They're this family of pseudo-gods. And what they can do is they can travel between parallel universes. And the way they do that is just by moving, and they go between different realities or probabilities, what have you. But it's not explained to you up front. And then they start doing it, and there's just all this weird... stream of consciousness thought that'll all of a sudden show up when someone starts walking or driving a car, and you don't understand why it's happening or what's going on until later on in the book, and you really have to it had to have started, one person must have read this and pushed themselves through and said, okay, it does pay off in the end. But yeah. I feel a lot of this sort of discongruity, and it's actually a similar sort of theme where Longshot's ability is he affects probability.
Right.
So, you know, the more unlikely it is that something will happen, the more likely it happens to him.
Right, right.
You know, so he's from this, you know, alternate dimension. He travels through portals just because that's an unlikely thing to have happened. So there you go. So, yeah, the other thing is he's made more, I mean, to add on to that alien theme, he has this very... David Bowie Space Oddity look to him, right down to the mullet.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah, he's got the big poofy hair up front, and then the long hair on the back, you know, coming around. It's got that little bit of a spike to it. He's long and gangly. You know, has some very peculiar looking eyes. I mean, they're not like an Asian sort of slant to them. They are, you know, it's a genuinely alien face. I mean, handsome, but not of this world. You don't see that collection of features, really.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, you know what? Those first couple issues are really confusing. And I think, you know, third and fourth issues, things really do start to come together where we see some of the other characters in this other universe. And we start to see these little snippets of Longshot's past. He starts to kind of regain his memory. You know, we find that he's a genetically engineered being, you know, not a human, based on humans. You know, we see a little bit about Mojo and, you know, the so-called spineless ones who rule Mojoverse. We see a little bit about his creator. And it starts to get kind of interesting. I think it was at this point, issue three, where I started to read a bit online and about the, you know, the future of these characters. And I think that's when it actually kind of got fascinating to me, you know? There's some neat stuff that happens long term with Longshot, with Ricochet Rita, with Spiral, who's one of the bad, you know, the bad guys after them. So, yeah.
Now, I'm hoping you can shed some light on this, Alex. There's one thing I don't quite get. Longshot eventually becomes one of the X-Men, right?
You know, he does, and I'm not sure when this happens exactly.
Right, but I mean, it doesn't seem like he's a mutant, though. I suppose that doesn't mean you absolutely can't be part of the X-Men if you're not a mutant. It just seems weird.
Right.
He does do this. I mean, when his power activates, you know, he does that exact same thing that Cable does. He has one eye that glows.
Yeah, I've been wondering about this. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was hoping. I mean, you have more of a history of you've read more Cable than I have, I think. I mean, you were more involved in X-Force back when that was back when Cable. I mean, Lefott, I think, was the fellow who first did that, and you're kind of a fan of his.
I used to be. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought maybe you'd have some insight as to, I'm like, why does both him and Cable, their powers activate and create that similar special effect, like one eye glows?
Unfortunately, I don't. And I think that they're unrelated, I hate to say. But there was another character that popped up right around that time. Was it Shatterstar, I think, who popped up right at the end of New Mutants, was a big part of X-Force in the early days, and he was from a future Mojoverse, and and I think there's some question as to whether he might be related to Longshot in some way. I think when the character was pitched, he was actually pitched as Longshot's son, and I think that was kind of discarded. I don't know what where that stands these days, but you know, but he had the same you know, star over his eye kind of thing, and you know, I don't know. I wonder if that was just kind of a, I hate to say it, but maybe just like something they thought was cool, and they were doing it with a bunch of their characters at the time, you know.
Sure, sure. Well, if it isn't something that they've explored, then it should be something that then I think it's something that would be kind of interesting that they explore. Although I think they've gotten away from that one glowy eye special effect, even with Cable lately.
Right.
You know, I've been reading the newest X-Force, and I have not noticed Cable's eye glowing. Although he doesn't seem to like to use his telekinesis very much anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with the character these days. Wasn't there something about how he doesn't want to use his powers as much because they're being reserved for, I don't know, keeping the techno virus in check or something?
Well, the techno virus got stripped. He no longer has the techno virus. Forge is now built a mechanical arm for him.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I really am enjoying the new X-Force, the Marvel Now X-Force.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Like, Colossus, Domino, Forge, Dr. Nemesis, and Cable. And I really think it's a good writing of X-Force, much better than the super dark Archangel-led one that they did a little while ago.
Huh.
Or maybe that was X Factor that they were doing, where Archangel was leading, Archangel and Psylocke were leading X Force.
Was X Force, and Wolverine was on the group.
Yeah, and Deadpool. I thought it was the one Deadpool comic that I was like, meh.
I think I actually bought, say, the first 10 issues of that or something. I don't know how many of them I actually read. I probably read 5 or 6, and then I was kind of keeping it up, figuring, oh, I don't know. But, yeah. So who knows?
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about artwork on this.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem like there's too much going on here that's really. I mean, again, we're looking at 1985. There wasn't a whole lot going on as in the art world as far as comics went yet.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the revolution was coming.
Yeah.
But
sure.
it really. You know, it hadn't changed that much since the 70s. You know, the techniques really hadn't changed. You know, you saw a bit, you see a bit more with perspective taking, I think, in this.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I think you see more skewed perspectives.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting. I think actually, you know, it's funny because I actually got to say, Art Adams, I think, or Arthur Adams, I think he's one of those really cool ones who kind of popped up right around this time. I think this was one of his first, I mean, I don't know if you'd call it a big title, but he went on to do Excalibur for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing some X-Men stuff here and there. And, you know, so I think this was some of his real early work. And he would turn into one of the real cool ones. Definitely not one of the superstar types,
right,
like Jim Lee or, you know, Todd McFarlane or you know. Those,
right, but. Right, right. But that's part of what we're here to do, is to explore those things that are not,
oh yeah,
that are not all that well recognized. To explore those things, you go, okay, yeah, we all know who Todd McFarlane is, but do we all know who this fella is, and what did he contribute? Well, it does look like, I mean, there are things happening here. I don't exactly know how to describe them. I mean, you speak better to the design world than I do.
Well, I do. I think there's some really, really cool stuff happening. His use of lines to create shadow. You know, these line patterns. I think are really cool. But yeah, no, definitely still early stuff though. It's, I don't know.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about let's take a break from this, because I think we're winding down. I think we're running out of energy on this guy. Let's talk a little bit about next week. You had texted me an idea.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, you had wanted to cover alternate weeks. You wanted to cover X-Men. Specifically, I think Uncanny X-Men. Now, are you thinking starting with Giant Size X-Men 1, or do you want to go all the way back to the first, you know, the original five X-Men, and what is it that you're thinking of?
This might be really painful, but I'm thinking all the way back.
Okay, so you want to go all the way back to
Lee and Kirby, Stanley number 1. Yep.
And just and work our way up slowly.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You know, what do you think about that?
No, I can do it. I've got the power.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, I just read
but here,
the first
here's,
five.
Here's something that I wanted to bring up, though.
Oh, okay.
I would very much like to do it three at a time rather than six at a time.
Ah, we could do that. Okay.
Because here's the thing. Six older comics are much harder for me to power through than six comics written from in the 1990s or the 2000s.
No, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they're wordier and they're just a bit more of a struggle. And I'm just like, the payoff is not so worth it. But I mean, there are some very interesting is a terrible word to use. There are some very quirky things that happen. I mean, we're talking. We're coming off the. This is a time which we're coming. I believe we're coming off the Silver Age of comics. And things need to make a bit more sense. You know, things are now pseudoscience rather than fantastical like they were in the Golden Age.
Right.
You're starting to see, you know, I think you're seeing a different sort of thing. And I think it would be a really neat thing to do, since I'm so into all new X-Men, the one where the new thing where Bendis has brought the old ones from the 60s has actually had them travel in time to the modern era, or the modern comics era, where,
oh, yeah.
so you've got teenage Cyclops facing off against like 40-something crazy Cyclops.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We should
anyway,
explore that. Yeah.
Yeah. So in any case, I think that should be rewarding for me at least, because I really am enjoying the and of course, and you'll like this, Alex, if you haven't been reading that yet.
I haven't.
I mean, when you bring the original five X-Men forward, you know who comes with them.
Well,
Jean Grey is alive again. Exactly.
That's right. Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So, I mean, and I know how much you love that drama. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, so imagine Jean Grey, not crazy, coming forward in time, learning all the terrible things she does.
That's right.
And then trying to not get stabbed by Wolverine.
Well, she also comes into the middle of all this mess with Cyclops, right? Cyclops these days is doing all kinds of crazy crap. And back then, she wasn't even so in love with him quite yet.
No, not really.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah, and yet know that in the future you're going to marry that man who murders Charles Xavier.
That's right. Who is very much their, you know, I would say even more so their mentor, their, you know, protector, so forth and so on in those early days.
Exactly. Okay, Alex. So, let's do that. Let's start 1 through 6 next week.
Sounds great.
We are going. We will push at that. This is going to be the first time that we tackle Lee and Kirby.
Indeed.
I think it's exciting.
I am very excited.
I'm ready to do it. Anything else you want to add in before we hang up?
No, I feel like we. I feel like I completely took the piss out of this series. I really did a number on it. But you know. Yeah, you know, in the beginning it was tough. By the end, I didn't know how I felt. There were some cool things, but anyway, whatever.
Well, talk to me a little bit about those cool things, Alex.
Well, you know, I think some of the cool stuff is...
Because I don't see the cool things, so this is great. This is a thing where we can actually disagree. So I want you to make a case for me. Tell me, why should I bother to read past issue 3 of Longshot?
Well, you know, I think... Here's where it kind of comes from. I am very much kind of a long story arc mythology kind of guy. I really, really get into this stuff. I'm a huge fan of the whole, you know, Cyclops, Jean Grey thing.
You're a huge fan of things that are long, yeah?
Oh, yeah, thanks. And so, you know, reading on the Wikipedias, you start to find out about some of these other characters. Ricochet Rita, who... is really just sort of introduced as, you know, that she's this stunt double, basically, I think. And for whatever reason, she kind of falls in love with Longshot, and then she's willing to just sacrifice everything for him in the end. And it's very bizarre. But you start to, on the Wikipedias anyway, you learn things about her. You learn about Spiral. Essentially, Spiral is the future Ricochet Rita, I believe. Which I think is kind of crazy. So she goes, they go into Mojoverse, they get captured by Mojo again, and he does a number on them, has her captive, and alters her.
Mm.
And I don't know, there's something, you know, there's something very compelling about that. Then, of course, you know, in a very sick and twisted way, sends, you know, future Mojo sends her back in time to help himself. And to
so
set
is
this
Mojoverse
whole thing to events.
So Mojoverse is something that comes up often.
Not often. And I really don't know. I can't say that I've ever actually read any Mojo storylines in X-Men. Uh-huh. But
right.
Here and there anyway. I don't know.
All right, Alex. What else have you got to say about it?
No, that's pretty much it. I think, you know, everything that I'm kind of interested in happens outside of this miniseries. That's the thing.
Right.
So,
Right. Well, here's the thing then. So, in the future, in the Marvel future, there are other writers that look back to Longshot and go, "Okay, we can build off of this." Is that true? Is that what you're telling me?
That's the way it seems to me. You know, everyone saw a whole lot of potential in this character. This cool character who came out of nowhere and has this weird luck ability and who knows, and anyway,
it's a difficult here's the thing, it is a challenge, it is a difficult character to write in sequential art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could I can't even imagine how one would make a film of a character who has the ability to have to alter probability in a way that unlikely things happen. Except, okay, I won the lottery again. Wow, it sure is nice to win the lottery all the time. Yeah. And also have the character. I mean, both have the character have no understanding of themselves, no understanding of who they are, what their name is. Just suddenly be chased through a portal and go. Right. I mean, that's a tall order. It really is. It's an intense challenge. There aren't really special effects that you can rely on. You know, this character is not going to get into a whole ton of fights. He doesn't have that dark and gritty sort of mystique that Wolverine has. Wolverine also suffers from amnesia. Doesn't understand where he comes from. For some reason, heals himself, has an adamantium skeleton, and he was introduced in a weird way to fight the Hulk as like a one-off character, this little guy, and you know, we find out that he speaks fluent Japanese. He's a ninja. He fought in the Civil War. All these things, you know, come out, and it all kind of fits together into the Wolverine package. I mean, you could have said, I think that you know, Wolverine. He started out as a POW in the Korean War, and that's where he got his. That's where he got his, you know, adamantium skeleton. It would have been just as rewarding, I think. It's just, you know, something about that character is... Wolverine is easy, I think. He's got claws, he stabs things, he's kind of mean. Right. You know, there's a lot to go on. With Longshot, it isn't that easy. You know, he doesn't have fleshy claws, he doesn't have eye beams, he can't even fly, you know, he doesn't have super strength. You know, you can't have just a big, huge fight scene sequence to capture everyone's imagination. You really have to rely on storytelling. And that's a challenge. It really is. And
very much.
Yeah. And I don't think the writer really met that challenge. I don't think I could have met that challenge. I'm not sure if that challenge is even all that meetable.
Right.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I mean... While I'm rough on this series, while I say yes, it was difficult to read. Yes, I don't feel it was very rewarding. Yes, I get that the things that were put in place in this actually do pay off later on in other series. At the same time, and I do agree. It's another thing. That's a reason that I want to explore the Marvel Universe with you. Is that I want to find these little things that are out there. At the same time. Man, this was difficult.
It really was. Well, you know, and of course the question, you know, all of that said, I think the question really is, what is it that the writers, the creators at Marvel have continually found so compelling about this character?
Right.
I don't think that's something that we're able to see in this miniseries. It's a mystery to me.
Yeah.
But oh well.
All right, Alex. I think it's time to button this up.
I think so. Okay. Well, thanks for chatting. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, as always. And thank you, listeners, for paying attention to Kazawi, the most powerful podcast on the planet.